The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think that's a weakness of this bill, which is also a weakness of many other bills and approaches to data brokers, is carving out those first parties. And that creates a gap in the national security context, because then a foreign actor could approach a first party location data app or anything else and simply purchase the information from there.
It's the Lawfare Podcast. I'm Stephanie Pell, Senior Editor at Lawfare, with Justin Sherman, Senior Fellow at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy.
They were taking this sensitive information, including about kids, and sharing it. So I think that's a great example of why, when you have these limitations on percent of revenue or first third party, you completely ignore activity that's happening that's really, really concerning. And in fact, might be the most concerning, because they're getting data directly from people.
Today, we're talking about the benefits and limits of a new law governing data brokers.
Justin, you're back to talk about Congress's ongoing efforts to regulate the data broker ecosystem. And this time there has been a significant development. Can you start off by bringing us up to speed? What has happened in Congress?
Yeah, we do have an interesting development. Usually I feel like we end these episodes by asking what should Congress do, and now we're opening with Congress having done something. So just last night, the Senate passed a foreign aid package that has a bunch of different elements in it, including several foreign aid expenditures, including a bill related to TikTok. In this context, when talking about data brokers, it also included a bill that the House had written, essentially attempting to limit the personal data about Americans that third-party data brokers, these companies that buy and sell people's data, limiting the data about Americans that those companies can sell to foreign countries, specifically entities in China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. And so this was, as we'll I'm sure get into, legislation that has been talked about for a little while, and there was some separate movement in the House around it. But now that it's been attached to this aid package, it has moved through the Senate as of last night. And when I say last night, this would be Tuesday, April 23rd is when the Senate passed this package.
And to be clear, when we are talking about data brokers and the data broker ecosystem, can you tell us who some of the players are? As we know, this bill is focusing on preventing the sale of Americans' data to certain countries that we will discuss. But give us a little background about the data broker ecosystem and who the various players are.
There are thousands of data brokers in the United States. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's also a global industry. There's a large data brokerage ecosystem in India and in Singapore and in the EU and elsewhere, a slowly growing one in China, which is interesting. And so in the US, there are a wide range of companies involved in this business practice of selling data. This ranges from large publicly traded companies like Oracle, which has a cloud business and software businesses. It also has a data sale business. This includes the large credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. It includes very small people search websites. So the sort of online background check sites that often pop up when you Google a name, that scrape information from public records and sell it online, as well as, and this is important in terms of the bill, there are also a lot of companies involved in selling data that are first parties. And by that, I mean, they're the companies we directly interact with. So this might be a mobile app that sells people's location data. This might be a telehealth service that sells information about people's access to prescription medications. And so it's a pretty wide-ranging ecosystem in the US. And as we just noted, there are a wide range of players, from large companies to small ones, from specialized companies to companies that sell all kinds of data. And it really varies in terms of whether they make all of their money from selling data, which some do, or whether they sell data on the side to supplement their revenue.
And before we delve into the substance of the legislation, as you noted, this was a bill that started on the House side and passed as a standalone bill. And as I understand it, the vote was 414 to zero. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it was 414 to zero, which is quite notable, of course, that there was, I mean, I would say a lot of consensus, but clearly just consensus that this is legislation that needed to be passed. In terms of the context of how this happened, this all really, we can't really talk about this particular bill without also talking about the TikTok bill. And we're not going to get too much, I know, into TikTok here and the TikTok bill here. And there are some great recent pieces on Lawfare folks have written, so go read those about the TikTok bill. But I mentioned the TikTok bill because that's what spurred the authorship of this legislation, was there had been discussion in the House for a long time, of course, about TikTok. And then recently, with the introduction of a bill basically saying ByteDance has to sell TikTok to a U.S. owner or the app stores have to block it. As that was being debated and as folks were trying to get the number of votes they needed to get that through the House, some members of Congress and their staff rightfully asked, well, what about data brokers and what about the rest of our data ecosystem? Like, okay, we can hear you out that maybe there are some concerns from folks about certain things with TikTok. What about the fact that we don't have a comprehensive set of privacy regulations in the US? What about the fact that a foreign actor could approach a data broker and buy 200 million Americans' location data or a bunch of people's health conditions with no restriction? Like, that seems to be a gap as well. And that's what spurred the authorship of this bill, is the committee said, okay, well, we're going to then create a second bill that would address some of those, or attempt to address, I'll say, some of those other concerns. And we'll also introduce it along with the TikTok bill. And so after the TikTok vote happened and the TikTok bill passed the House then voted on this legislation dubbed the Protecting Americans' Data from Foreign Adversaries Act. Someone can figure out what that acronym is. But so that this was voted on after the TikTok bill. So all to say, that's what I think of it is, you know, I'm glad that Congress is paying more attention, which it certainly is, to consumer privacy. But I would say we can't talk about how it had a 414 to zero vote without seeing the TikTok context and the point that if we're going to focus on one app, we should also make sure we have good data privacy controls in some other areas.
So then what is this legislation attempting to do, and how is it attempting to achieve its goals?
The central concern is that we have very few regulations whatsoever on this practice of buying and selling data in the US. For example, there are, you know, if as long as you're not, you know, doing it in a way that's defined as deceptive legally, there's no restrictions on selling people's geolocation data whatsoever, right? You can sell massive heat maps of people's real-time locations. There's no issue there. Similarly with health data, right? We assume that a lot of health data would be protected when in fact, for example, pharmacies are permitted to sell people's prescription purchase information under a ridiculous corporate free speech decision. So all to say, there was concern that, okay, well, this is a privacy issue domestically, and certainly we've talked about that on past podcasts, but this is also a national security issue, right? If you particularly think about how could a foreign actor approach these companies and purchase information from them, say about people who live in the Washington, D.C. area and their debt and their propensity for gambling, which is stuff you can go buy. I've bought stuff like this before. That could also include location data around sensitive government buildings. So there was generally a concern that, you know, there's a national security risk here and we need to do something about it. So what the legislation attempts to do is say third-party data brokers, so not those first parties, not mobile apps and not, you know, your telehealth provider, but third-party companies that collect American sensitive data, and sensitive data in this legislation draws on ADPA, the Comprehensive Privacy Bill from last Congress. So
that never passed.
That never passed. But it references some of that other work, which I think is good. But so it says certain third-party data brokers cannot sell those categories of sensitive data on Americans to individuals in, as I had alluded to, four countries: North Korea, China, Russia, and Iran, as well as to any entities headquartered in those countries or otherwise controlled by those countries. So, you know, hence, for instance, if there was a Chinese technology company that had most of its operations in Latin America, that could still be covered because of where the company is headquartered, right? So that's the general thrust of the bill, is to say we want to create some prohibitions on these companies selling sensitive data on Americans to certain foreign countries, and who's in charge of enforcing that? That is the Federal Trade Commission, and they're going to make sure that they are investigating if any companies are violating this law.
And we're going to talk more about this enforcement mechanism and the pros and cons of leaving it to the FTC. But I also think it's worth noting that the Biden administration recently issued an executive order that is also focused on preventing the sale of Americans' bulk sensitive data to certain adversaries, countries. How would you compare this legislation to that executive order?
Yeah, the executive order is very significant in this area. As you said, it was also signed recently, right? So it's quite interesting timing, right, that we've had the executive order and then we've had this. And I should also say I consult for the Justice Department as a disclaimer. These are, of course, my personal views I'm saying here, but just to say I have also helped with the executive order a bit. So in full disclosure, but the executive order, I think, attempts to do something very similar to the bill, right? In the general sense that they're both concerned about this national security risk associated with a foreign actor potentially approaching a data broker and buying a bunch of information that, again, could be used in a national security context. So not thinking about broader privacy, not thinking about, you know, algorithmic targeting outside of national security, specifically thinking about examples like I mentioned where you can get access to non-public commercial data on things like debt that could be useful to try and recruit a spy or something like that. So, but what the executive order does is it says that right now in the proposed regulations, right, this is still ongoing, is a little bit different from the bill in that it targets third-party and first-party sale of data. So that's one big difference, is it says it's not just a third-party credit reporting agency or a third-party data broker that would have restrictions on its sale of data overseas. It's actually anyone who's selling data or even bulk transferring is the term they use, data. And so that would include things like a mobile app selling people's geolocation data. That would be under the scope of the regulations right now from the executive order. It would not be under scope of the bill. So that's one big difference. The second big difference is that the executive order focuses specifically on data about government personnel and data of certain types over a certain threshold. What do I mean by that? Well, there's two categories, right? So one is if data is related in some significant way to a current U.S. government employee, then that is going to be restricted, right? Whether that's financial information or health data or other categories under the executive order. The second bucket is it's not specifically related to government personnel or contractors or military service members, but it's sensitive information about Americans where the data set is large enough to pose a risk. So what the executive order regulations are going to do is basically pick a number and say, maybe, for example, if you sell location data on over 100,000 Americans, that's automatically restricted. Or if you sell genomic data on over 1,000 people, that's automatically restricted. So that's the second big difference, is the executive order has some bounds on data set size and types of data a little bit more narrowly than the bill does, which is saying you can't sell this data on Americans broadly. So those are two differences, right? We have the first and third party data broker definitions. We have the thresholds restrictions versus don't sell data on all Americans. And the third big difference I'd point out is related to enforcement. And so the reason I mentioned the Justice Department is that the executive order is giving the Justice Department the authority to monitor data broker activities or audit data broker activities to make sure that they're complying with the order and not selling data to individuals in the covered countries, which also under the executive order include tentatively Cuba and Venezuela. So the DOJ is in charge of it. It's very export control-like, where companies have to keep track of who they're selling to. There are reporting requirements proposed. The DOJ can determine in each case if a company made a reasonable effort to not sell to someone. So it's very similar to if you think of OFAC and sanctions and export controls and all of that, versus, as we mentioned, the bill gives the authority to the FTC. So that was a lot, but across those three areas, I think, you know, the first and third party definition difference, the difference in data scope is important. And then that third piece, right? One is a very national security enforcement style regime from the Justice Department. The other one is coming from the FTC, which of course historically focused on consumer privacy.
So given those differences, it sounds like you are suggesting that both efforts are welcome and needed.
I think both efforts absolutely are welcome and needed. You know, and again, with both, right, you can get into what are the pros and cons of each approach. And for instance, there are downsides to having thresholds. You know, you can't fully address the national security risks without a comprehensive approach. You know, and we can get more into the bill too. So overall, absolutely needed. I'm thrilled that the executive branch is focused on these issues. I'm thrilled that Congress is trying to at least, you know, take a little step forward on these problems. The questions, again, come back to implementation, scope, and, you know, what else do we need to do, because it's such a wide and unregulated ecosystem, to make sure that these risks are accounted for.
So taking into account all those positive aspects of these efforts, you wrote a piece in Lawfare at the time that we just had the House bill, before it went over to the Senate, where you identified some key problems or gaps. And one of those issues stems from how the bill then, and now the legislation that has passed through the Senate, defines the term data broker. Can you talk about that and what some of the implications are for the way the data broker definition is limited?
The bill takes an approach to defining a data broker that is unsurprising, given how a lot of bills and some state laws have defined a data broker, but it's also a weak definition. And this is what I had alluded to around a first party versus a third party. So again, just to be clear about this, by first party, I mean a company or organization you directly interact with. So this could be everything from Facebook or Google, if you use their apps or websites, to a telehealth provider to a mobile app you have in your phone, even something maybe as back of mind for privacy discussion these days as, you know, a local restaurant website where you order a pizza, right? So anyone you're interacting with directly, that's gathering data about you, but the direct relationship is the important piece versus a third party where it doesn't mean they don't collect data about you. It doesn't mean that they don't make decisions that impact you. It just means you don't directly interact with that company. And this is a lot of data brokers, right? You know, Axiom, for example, is one of the largest data brokers in the world, has hundreds or thousands of data points on billions of people, which is an extraordinary amount of data. And most people have never heard of Axiom in their life. And they're not going on the Axiom website and they're not, you know, buying Axiom merch or I don't even know if that exists, but right, like they don't have that direct business relationship with the company. And so that's kind of a debate in this area is how do you define a data broker? This bill defines it as third parties. Some other state laws like in Vermont or Oregon define it as a third party. But what I always say is there's a real problem with that, which is you're focused on the entity and not the activity. So you're focused on the entity of what is a data broker, quote unquote, rather than what you're really concerned about, which is the activity of selling data. And this matters because a lot of those first parties, as I mentioned, also sell data. There are lots of telehealth companies and mental health apps that sell data about people's activity. There would not really be a market, a multi-billion dollar market, for people's phone location data if it was not for mobile apps. There are at least hundreds, if not thousands, of mobile apps that sell users' location data. So you use the app, they're a first party to you. You may have some understanding that they're collecting your location data. You also probably have some expectations around that. And then they can go and sell that information. So all to say, I think that's a weakness of this bill, which is also a weakness of many other bills and approaches to data brokers, is carving out those first parties. And that creates a gap in the national security context because then a foreign actor could approach a first party location data app or anything else and simply purchase the information from there.
As I understand it, the executive order is different in that way, in that it focuses on the data transactions so that those first parties you mentioned would be governed by the EO and, you know, the DOJ has a rulemaking process that is going forward.
That's correct. And the comment period on the notice of proposed rulemaking closed recently. And as you said, yes, of course, this is ongoing and there will be many more iterations and opportunities for the public to comment. I would encourage any listeners with thoughts about this to provide comments to the Justice Department. But that's essentially the view, right? As you said, that we're not concerned about, well, is this entity a data broker and how much percent of revenue do they make from data sale? And does that mean that that's not the concern, right? The perspective, I think, is we're concerned about the national security risk. And for that reason, we're just concerned about the end outcome, which is someone getting access to this highly sensitive bulk data on U.S. persons and using it to harm national security. So it really is that activity that's the focus of the proposed regulations. And again, not getting into a back and forth about which entities are first parties or third parties, or do they make enough money to be qualified as a data broker? And instead just focused on, are you selling data? As I often say, if you broker data, you're a data broker or you're engaged in data brokerage, right? And so it's focused on that activity. I will say this also, as I wrote in the article, leads to an irony with the legislation, which is because of the third party limit in the House's data broker bill that's now, you know, passed the Senate aid package, I pointed out that the TikTok bill could pass and become law, and this data broker bill could pass and become law, and it would still be legal for TikTok to directly sell U.S. persons' data to a foreign actor.
Because they are a first party?
Because they're a first party.
Under the bill?
Under the House bill, yep, because they have a direct business relationship with their 150 million plus customers, selling data about those customers would not make them a data broker because they're a first party. It doesn't matter what they do with the data. This is, again, the problem with the entity approach. Because they're a first party, it doesn't matter what they do with the data. They're not going to be covered. So, you know, I this has not been lost on other folks. There are plenty of other folks in this area who've made the same point. But I did notice that immediately, that you do realize there is a big gap here. If we're collectively concerned about potential Chinese government access to U.S. data, that you could pass both of these pieces of legislation and the end result could still be, you know, TikTok being permitted to sell data to foreign governments.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Could your political views make you the target of cybercrime, identity theft, stalking, or even violence? I used to think this was silly, and then weird things started happening to me. Someone defaced my car. It had Lawfare license plates on it. Somebody delivered weird antique postcards of Guantanamo Bay to my house. You know, weird stuff. The volume of personal data online has tripled between 2019 and 2023. And angry individuals fueled by political polarization can access it all for up to 98% of American citizens. And I was one of them. Lots of people were using my name, my home address, other information about me to try to intimidate me. And I want to say that has dramatically slowed down in recent months. And one of the reasons is Delete Me. As I have said before, there are products here that I read the ads because, you know, that's my job. And there are products here that I read the ads because I really use them and really like them. And Delete Me is one of the Lawfare advertisers that I am most enthusiastic about. And here's why. It finds and removes personal information I don't want online, and it makes sure it stays off. It's a subscription service that removes your personal information from all of the largest search databases on the web, and in the process, it helps prevent potential identity theft, doxing, and phishing scams. And here's the important point. It doesn't just do it once, because the information will get back into the systems. It does it, and then it does it again. So the first time I got one of these reports, and they send regular reports, at Delete Me, you know, there were a whole bunch of systems that I'd come off of. But then each time I get one now, there's still one or two or three that I'm back on the system and Delete Me has once again deleted me. So sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts will take it from there. And as I say, they send regular personalized privacy reports showing what info they have found, where they found it, and what they removed. It's always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. When you sign up, they immediately go to work scrubbing all your personal information from data broker platforms. Your personal profile is no longer theirs to sell. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me now at a special discount for Lawfare listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20
and use the promo code LAWFARE20 at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/LAWFARE20 and enter code LAWFARE20 at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/LAWFARE20, code LAWFARE20.
So the bill also has a definition of sensitive data that appears to be drawn, again, from other legislation.
Yes.
Can you talk about that definition and what benefits it may bring?
Absolutely. So ADPA, the American Data Privacy Protection Act, as I had mentioned, was the quote-unquote comprehensive privacy legislation that was proposed in the last Congress, not passed. But the reason we mention this is because this was a significant piece of legislation. There was a lot of work that went into it. There were many iterations of it, and a lot of folks in the privacy community spent a lot of time working on and trying to improve the different definitions and provisions in that bill. And so I do think it's a good thing that when the House was writing this data broker bill, they looked to ADPA for definitions of sensitive data. And so in this particular case, I mean, with both bills, but the data broker bill includes under sensitive data, government issued identifiers, so a social security number, a passport number, and so on, information about past, present, or future health conditions or treatments, numbers from people's financial accounts or credit cards, biometric and genetic data, precise geolocation information, and some other data types. It also has language in ADPA that was also included in this House bill related to inference. So if you make a prediction about a piece of information or infer a piece of information that wasn't directly gathered, that could still be covered. And that's important, right? Because you could say, and data brokers say this frequently, oh, well, we're not selling data about, you know, people who have depression, who are suffering from depression. We would never do that. We're selling lists of people with a demonstrated interest in purchasing antidepressant prescriptions. This is a real example, right? So you get these like sort of semantic gymnastics where companies are trying to maybe skirt saying that they collect a certain type of data. And then there's also just the fact that you can infer a lot of health data and other things from location information and so on. So all to say, I think that's a good definition that the bill uses for sensitive data. And this is another point some folks have made about why having this bill pass could be significant, is you then get that definition of sensitive data into federal law. And so then hopefully the idea is next time someone writes a new bill or there's a new comprehensive privacy debate, we already at least have that reference point in federal law. So that could be a really interesting, way beyond data brokers, element of having this bill as part of the aid package that has now gone off to President Biden for signature.
So in contrast to that very positive development or element of the legislation, you do in your Lawfare article identify some other issues of concern with the understanding that you are not trying to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. But you do note that the legislation fails to mention or address situations where third-party countries could be used as intermediaries for countries that the legislation is targeting, i.e. trying to prevent the purchase of Americans' data. Can you talk a bit about that?
I appreciate you mentioning the perfect, not the enemy of the good piece. I certainly don't want it to come off that way, and I don't think that way, right? You can't expect a perfect congressional bill that doesn't exist, right? But just to frame it, and then I'll get into specifically your question, the way I think about this is you shouldn't make the perfect the enemy of the good. At the same time, this is a problem where, and by problem I mean the privacy and safety and security risks from data brokerage, this is a problem set where the real solution lies with legislation. It lies with new laws. The FTC does some stuff, that's great. Now the DOJ is doing some stuff, that's great. Some states have done stuff, that's great. The real solution is going to come from new laws. And so that's one of the lenses through which I looked at this bill, was to say, we really have a need for new, strong legislation. Is this bill taking us in that direction, or is it doing, you know, is it falling short of that? And so the third country piece you mentioned is one of my concerns. Let's talk about the executive order as a good point of contrast, right? So the executive order has some restrictions around companies selling data to entities in China and Russia and Iran and North Korea and Cuba and Venezuela. And as some folks have pointed out, that is a gap. There's a gap there, right? Because it doesn't say, well, what about a front company the Russians set up in Germany? Or what about selling data to an intermediary in Brazil that then sells it, again, completely independently to someone in China, right? You have this, as you said, quote unquote, third country problem where they can be an intermediary for data sale. So this is a great example of why I have some issues with the bill, is the executive branch has limits in what it can do there, right? Because the executive branch can't say, oh, well, you can't sell Americans' bulk geolocation data to anybody outside of the United States, because that's exceeding the bounds of law, right? The executive branch is drawing on the International Emergency Economic Powers Act and sanctions authorities and others to do this order. It doesn't have the authority to say you can't sell Americans' data to, you know, 190 whatever countries, or you can't sell to these continents, right? That's the kind of thing where Congress would need to step in. So that's one area where I looked at the bill and said, okay, I understand what they're trying to do. I appreciate the effort. You know, this hopefully could make some marginal improvement on the status quo, but Congress is the one that really needs to be saying, let's put provisions in here about third countries. Congress is really the one that needs to say, if we're creating a new law, why don't we make sure it's meaningfully better and more impactful than what's already in law? So this is one example of an issue I had with the bill, is the third country piece, but it's within that broader umbrella of like, yes, we should push for improvements. We should not make the perfect the enemy of the good, but we do need to have Congress, you know, do its job and go further than the existing law already does.
You also raise some concerns with the bill's enforcement regime, which puts everything in the hands of the FTC. I know you are a fan of the FTC's work. So what are your concerns with making the FTC sort of the sole enforcement authority here?
I'd say there's two buckets of concerns. And yes, I would fan. Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah, I certainly, yes, I would describe myself as someone who thinks the FTC is now and has for years been doing important, you know, legally grounded bipartisan work on privacy. I know nothing about antitrust, so can't speak to other areas, but on privacy, 100%. I have two buckets of issues here. One is specifically related to the national security framing of the bill. So, and I say this as someone who does work on both privacy and national security issues. I say this as someone who has been very vocal in calling out the national security issues from data brokerage. The bill takes a national security frame, of course, to the problem and looks at the issue of possible sale to foreign actors. It then also leaves the FTC responsible for enforcing it. And one of the issues I point out is, well, the FTC, you know, is very, very deep, has a lot of deep experts on ad tech, on data brokers, on privacy. So that's good. And they very much know how to go in and do audits and look at company controls and is data anonymized properly and this and that. But they're not a national security focused agency. That's not their specialty. There are, I think right now, maybe, and I cite this in the piece, this is public, you know, 3 or 4 people in the entire commission that have security clearances. Like, this is not an organization that's set up to do things like, well, here's a front company that's been set up by the Chinese government to acquire data. Where is it based? Oh, we found this out because of XYZ intelligence. How do we prevent that without disclose? Like, they're just not, we can go get into all the potential complexities of those kinds of scenarios, but they're just not set up to do that kind of national security approach. So that's one area in which I said, okay, this, we get a bit circular because it's a national security framing. It's about a data privacy issue. So because it's a data privacy issue, the natural and generally correct inclination is to give the authority to the FTC, but then the FTC is not a national security organization. So we go back to, you would need to give the FTC broader privacy authority for data brokers. So that's sort of one issue, I think, is just this agency being set up to have the capacity to specifically do the national security piece. Again, they're very deep experts on privacy, but on national security specifically, the FTC is not, you know, the place that's doing all the stuff. And the second piece, bucket of issues I have with giving it to the FTC comes back to funding. And as I and others have said many times, the FTC's entire team of privacy lawyers in their privacy division is about 40 people, 40, 45 people doing privacy enforcement for hundreds of millions of Americans. So already their case output is staggering. They don't sleep or something. I'm not really sure, but you know, they do a lot of work with very few resources. And so there's often this thing that happens in Congress, I think, where folks go, oh, well, we'll just have the FTC do it. It's like, well, with what money? With what additional resources? With what timeline, right? Because timeline's another piece. There have been discussions of a comprehensive privacy bill completely separately recently where people are talking about, oh, we're going to have the FTC hire hundreds of people to augment their privacy work and get going in a year. And anyone who's listening who has worked there or worked in these areas, like, you know that that's not a realistic timeline for a government organization to go from 40 people to 300 people and scale up and start doing enforcement. So again, it's a good effort from Congress to address this problem. I just think the second piece of the FTC challenge here is you can't be giving the FTC, I mean, you can, but you shouldn't give the FTC more and more authority and responsibility without a similar increase in funding and personnel and capacity to take on that additional casework.
So some of this has come out in the discussion so far, but if you could have had, you know, a magic wand when the House bill went over to the Senate, and used that wand, let's say, to make two changes to the bill, i.e. and the Senate would amend them in that way, what would your choices be?
My choices would be change the definition. I actually would prefer the bill not even use the word data the phrase data broker. I would prefer the term data brokerage or broking or whatever, right? Talk about the activity and not the entity. So don't get into the first third party thing. Don't also get into this conversation about they have to make a significant percentage of revenue from selling data, which I also think is ridiculous, right? A great example of this is Life 360. Life 360 is a quote-unquote family safety app where parents can put the app on their kids' phones, watch their locations, and check in on them. The Markup did a story a couple years ago that revealed that Life 360 was secretly selling parents and also children's location data to third parties. They were not making most of their revenue from doing that, but they were taking this sensitive information, including about kids, and sharing it. So I think that's a great example of why when you have these limitations on percent of revenue or first third party, you completely ignore activity that's happening that's really, really concerning. And in fact, might be the most concerning because they're getting data directly from people. So I would say if I had one recommendation, too late now, but it would have been change that definition in there. And then the second thing is just general, which is make sure you're giving the FTC more funding. If you're going to give the FTC this authority, which now seems incredibly likely to be signed by the president and then put into law, make sure you're giving the FTC more resources for their privacy team. And I said this before, I understand that there are different disputes, including partisan or political disputes about the FTC's antitrust activity. Again, I'm not an antitrust expert. I do not have an opinion on that. But when it comes to privacy, it's been bipartisan work for years. So, you know, they need more funding.
So I'd like to ask you just to reflect now, having given us the pros and cons of this particular piece of legislation, you know, Can you reflect on the significance, though, that we looks like we're going to have legislation that begins to regulate the data broker ecosystem on a federal level?
You know, I'm glad to see the attention to it. Again, it's not standalone, right? And even though these other things I'm going to mention either have not been introduced yet or are unlikely to be passed or are not yet passed, you know, there's this legislation that now has passed the Senate that is hugely significant. There has also been a lot of debate about the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act and about the U.S. government purchasing data from data brokers without warrants or court orders. There's been a lot of discussion about data brokers in relation to the American Privacy Rights Act, the new discussion draft privacy package in Congress. So this topic of data brokers has been coming up more and more on the Hill. And so, yeah, I do think it's a significant moment that this is going to be passed into law. I think it reflects a clear bipartisan consensus that these activities are concerning. And again, when you have companies that are not, you know, it's not that they're using the data internally for their own business purposes. For instance, these are companies who are selling data and sometimes without controls, oftentimes very sensitive data, you know, and they might do it for marketing, they might do it for something else, or, you know, there's various arguments, dubious or otherwise, about fraud prevention. So I just, it really just shows there's more attention to data brokers as an issue. And so I hope that rather than see this as quote unquote the solution, which it absolutely is not, and I think the authors of the legislation would be the first to say that, you know, we can see this as an important step in continuing to try and fight for, you know, better comprehensive privacy protections for Americans.
And since you mentioned the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act, I think it's an interesting, you know, companion or other side of the coin to this legislation. And it appeared, at least for a time, to potentially be on a path for passage. It got caught up in the FISA Section 702 reauthorization process. Can you share your thoughts on the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act and how it, you know, may relate to this kind of the legislation that now looks like it will become law?
It's sort of, I don't want to say it's the other way, you know, or the flip side of the issue, but it sort of is a flip side of the issue, right? Rather than, okay, we're concerned about what are the national security risks to the U.S. of a foreign government acquiring bulk data or buying data from data brokers? What are the domestic privacy, civil rights, civil liberties, freedoms, security issues and concerns with the U.S. government purchasing data from data brokers? And so, you know, the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act has also been part of the Section 702 and FISA debates on the Hill. I mean, it's a lot of different issues have gotten pulled in to that debate about U.S. government surveillance activities, data protections for Americans. But at a high level, I am a big fan of the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act. I think that, of course, law enforcement is going to say that it adds value to them to purchase geolocation data without a warrant or to quickly be able to go into a system like Thomson Reuters Clear or LexisNexis, which are big data broker repositories of people's information, and look people up and figure out where they live and make connections and try and hunt suspects. And like, of course, law enforcement is going to say that. I don't think that's the point, right? The point is not, does purchasing information without going through a legal process provide value to law enforcement? The question is, should you be doing this in a country where there are strong principles around having restrictions on law enforcement's ability to surveil Americans? And so, and I say this is not a lawyer, I understand there's all kinds of arguments about, you know, the Fourth Amendment and technically is it being violated here or not, and how does Carpenter fit in, and all kinds of legal issues. And there are some great papers out there, folks should go read about that. But yeah, at a high level, I'd say, look, like, you know, if we have protections in place for accessing this data otherwise, you should not, as a law enforcement agency, be able to go buy 100 million Americans' phone location data, not tell anyone, and not need a warrant. I just think that's very problematic. So, you know, different pieces of legislation, but again, I think drawing attention to this issue of data sale and important concerns around it.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just reiterating the two things I mentioned, right? One is that the executive order rulemaking process is ongoing. So the first window just ended, but there will be more windows for the public. That could be a private citizen listening, a company, a trade group, a think tank, to submit comments on the proposed regulations. I highly encourage folks to do so. And I say that in my personal capacity, right? That's just always an important thing. I think if people have thoughts on these things, to submit comments. And the second thing is, as we said, you know, now this bill is probably, this aid package is off to, I assume, be signed into law. This is a big moment for a step on data brokers. And also the TikTok bill is a piece of this. And I know we haven't talked about that today, but that's also obviously a huge tech policy and cybersecurity development. It would be remiss to not mention that as well. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the coming months.
Well, we'll have to leave it there for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. You can get ad-free versions of this and other Lawfare podcasts by becoming a Lawfare material supporter through our website, lawfaremedia.org/support. You'll also get access to special events and other content available only to our supporters. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Look out for our other podcasts, including Rational Security, Chatter, Allies, and The Aftermath, our latest Lawfare Presents podcast series on the government's response to January 6th. Check out our written work at lawfaremedia.org. The podcast is edited by Jen Patia, and your audio engineer this episode was Noam Osband of Goat Rodeo. Our theme song is from Alibi Music. As always, thank you for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.